When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Another episode of Game of Frameworks. I'm your host, Jay Hursko, obviously from the Agile Uprising podcast. And the topic of today's recording is a discussion around Discipline Agile. And I was lucky enough to blindly reach out and get in touch with one of the co-founders of Discipline Agile, Mr. Mark Lyons. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, Mark, for those that don't know you, can you give us a brief introduction about you, your history, and your involvement with Discipline Agile?
Oh, sure. Mark Lyons from Calgary, Canada. I'm actually doing this from London. I travel a lot. I flew around the world last year, about 180,000 miles. And that's to help out people around the world using Discipline Agile. I'm one of the co-creators with Scott Ambler. And I'm really humbled by the fact that Scott has chosen to take me along this journey. Scott had written 22, if you can imagine this, 22 books before we wrote our first of four books on Discipline Agile. So he brought a lot of, good thinking and collateral to the effort, and then asked for my help. And it's been kind of a whirlwind ever since. We just came out with our fourth book, which is a replacement of our original book that came out in 2012. The evolution of Discipline Agile, the background is that Scott joined IBM, I think around 2008, and was the worldwide leader at IBM for Agile and Lean. So he had a lot of responsibility, and he quickly realized that we needed a sort of a more enterprise class flavor of Agile, came up with the idea of Disciplined Agile to reflect like that enterprise understanding of Agile. And then he asked for my help, and during the last two years that he was with IBM from 2010-11 to 2012, we wrote the first book. So then we wrote an intro book, because the first one's kind of a big book, right, where people just want to spend like an airplane read, what is that in like 100 pages. And then we wrote an executive guide targeted as executives to help them understand where DAD fits in within the organization and what it means to have true business agility, not just at the team level. And then the book we just came out with in January replaced our first book. So it's a complete refactoring of the material from our first book. And instead of calling it Disciplined Agile Delivery Second Edition, we chose to use a more of a sexy title that actually reflects it better. Choose your way of working. And which is it's a Disciplined Agile Delivery Handbook, if you will, for optimizing your way of working.
Which is brilliant. I love that you changed it to way of working, which will get to the question I'm going to ask first. I will say this is the first Agile methodology I've come across, and I'm not calling it a framework for a reason, which we're obviously going to talk about, where you led in with a narrative book about how the system is intended to work. And to be completely honest, that's what wet my whistle. I picked up that book from Amazon, blew through that quickly and said, well, now I want to know more. And it obviously led to, picking up the actual, what amounts to the textbook, taking a CDA course. But the elephant in the room, Mark, so let's get this question out of the way. We're calling the series Game of Frameworks, and we're primarily dealing with scaling frameworks. Yet, however, Discipline Agile is not actually a framework, which I think is a common misconception. Can you give us a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, sure. I think technically, to be honest, I think it is a framework if you define what a framework is, but we're not using that term for a reason I'll explain in a second, or we're using it less. Pun intended. The biggest concern we have, the misconception out there, is that we are a scaling framework, and that absolutely is not the case. In fact, Gartner themselves, until a few years ago, lumped us in with the scaling frameworks. you know, the Saves, the Lesses, the Nexus, the Spotify's of the world. And I think a lot of us know that Spotify really isn't a framework, but that's another discussion. So what we had to point out to Gartner is that, you know, Safe exists for dealing in the large, many teams building one product. Large scale Scrum obviously is Scrum in the large, but that's not what we are. We are a toolkit, a collection of strategies that you can use to supplement whatever approach you're using, which could be using Scrum on one team of four people. And Scrum is described by 19 pages, the Scrum Guide officially. Clearly, that's not enough to get the job done. So we have to go out and find some technical practice, CI/CD, mob programming, all sorts of ideas that aren't described by Scrum. So it's a toolkit to draw strategies from to help you be more effective, regardless of what method or framework you're using. We're not purpose-built for scaling. Now, Gartner understands this now, and they've renamed their annual survey to something like the Enterprise Framework Survey, but they've changed the name. It doesn't say scaling anymore. So we're still part of that survey. Now, on to the second point about the word framework. We used to initially call that a process decision framework. And the idea here is that every day you make decisions when you're working on an agile, in an agile business, not just, by the way, software development, but everywhere we're making decisions. What kind of team do we need for an initiative? Where are we going to get those team members? Are they going to be consultants? Are they going to be full-time? What kinds of technologies are we going to use? What does the architecture look like? How are we going to supplement stories with other types of models? You know, decision, decision, decision. So it's a that's all related to process. It's a process decision framework. Well, here's the thing. People don't like process. And there seems to be an increasing backlash against frameworks, to be honest with you. So if your marketing message is process decision framework, I think, you know, it might explain why people haven't been picking it up as fast as we kind of expected they would. So this year, especially with the new book coming out, we've kind of repositioned our message to something that people understand a bit better. And that is, it's a toolkit. It's a toolkit. It's a hybrid of practices, not best practices, what Dave Snowden calls fit for context practices. And we lay out all the different practices. We organize them into goals that every kind of project or product has to make it easier to find the guidance. And then we provide a context-based trade-offs for, in this situation, story mapping might be a good idea. In this situation, a state chart might be appropriate. Not everybody is a process geek like Scott and I, right? We've read the books. There really is nothing out there like it. Nobody else has, you know, read all the books and consolidated all these practices into one library, if you will, one toolkit, so that you can get some guidance. And if I could just ask add one more point before another question, is that we're also talk about this in terms of guided continuous improvement. We're all familiar with continuous improvement. That's identify an improvement, try it out. If it works, continue. If it doesn't, abandon or pivot, do something else. And that's also complementary to this agile idea of failing fast. We have a change experiment that comes out of our retrospectives. If it works, great, and we improve. Many times it doesn't, and that, you know, that's failing, and we set an expectation that we're going to fail. We're going to fail fast, and we want management to be tolerant of that failure as long as we learn and improve. But here's the thing. If you take a team that hasn't been doing Agile for a while, so by the way, I've been doing Agile for 25 years before it was even called Agile, right? It was called iterative development, and Scrum predates the Agile Manifesto, right? So it's been around for a long, long time. So we've got a tremendous amount of history to bring to bear. We've seen what doesn't work and what works. Now contrast that to a team that is just maybe on their first or second Agile project. They're using Scrum, and their primary education has been based on a 19-page Scrum guide. We have found that in their retrospectives, they're not as effective as they could be in terms of identifying change experiments, because they're just not self-aware to know what, as an example, mob programming is. I do this survey when I teach workshops these days, is how many people here have heard of mob programming or mobbing? And about a third of the hands go up. Why? Because it's a relatively new practice. Well, you know what? Mobbing is a technique that's appropriate in some, not all, but in some situations it can be a very effective technique. And if you're not aware of what your options are, then you're not even exposed to some great ideas that could probably help you improve faster. So failing fast is a nice idea, but it can be expensive. It can be time consuming as the team matures and learns the available strategies that are available to them. This is where a good coach can help you out. They should know these strategies, but often people don't have the benefits of coaching. And even worse, sometimes those coaches don't know the strategies themselves. Where there's no real, the bar isn't set, in our view, high enough for a coach to understand all the available practices in a toolkit, which would make them a more effective coach, right? So this kind of, our concept is called guided continuous improvement. And what this means is apply the continuous improvement ideas I just talked about with change experiments, failing fast. But wouldn't it be better if we picked ideas that have been proven to work empirically in similar situations or contexts? By picking ideas, referencing them from the toolkit to say, in this kind of situation, this tends to work, like personas as an example, to help us build empathy with our users for better user experiences. If we pull proven ideas for our context, we're much likely to accelerate our learning and accelerate our continuous improvement. Why do we have to learn everything from scratch? Why do we have to figure it all out ourselves? It's been done before. I know we're unique organizations, unique teams, unique cultures, unique individuals, but there is some commonality between your situation and other situations out there where similar practices have worked for other people. So that's what we're saying. Stand on the shoulders of giants, right?
And that's
what we're doing. We didn't invent this stuff, right? We brought it out. We were the only people who sort of consolidated it from other thought leaders.
And one of the things that jumped out at me when I first started digging into Discipline Agile was, like you said early on, the lack of prescriptiveness. It's giving you options. I think the term you use, hybrid of practices. There are a bunch of options out there for you as a practitioner, as a coach, as a team, as an executive. You really need to, like you said, there's a lot of books out there. There's a lot of reading. You really need to understand the landscape as it currently sits and then pick and choose the approaches that make the most sense for you, which I think is probably, right, you just talked about failing fast and the expensive cost of that. Well, at least you can make a more informed decision. You find yourself, hopefully, farther in front of the eight ball than you would like to be. One of the things you said early on, Mark, which I'd like to go into, is you talked about how Discipline Agile complements your delivery. And this is another one of those attributes that I think, one of the questions I ask in these interviews is talk about one or two attributes that make your framework stand out. And one of the things I noticed was Discipline Agile is not prescriptive in the sense that you can only do Discipline Agile. It does complement working with a different Agile practice, a different Agile methodology. Can you explain that a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a small company. Scott and I and at the same time, we have coaches and subcontractors and stuff, but we're running a services business. We don't just write about this stuff. We actually do it, right? And we learn from our own experiences and incorporate that into the toolkit. But we're trying to figure all this out ourselves. And we're not marketing experts. And as I told you, our marketing message was suboptimal. And I think we're getting better at it. And one of the other mistakes we've made, over the years is we haven't being shy about saying, you know what, rather than doing SAFe, maybe you should look at DAD. And that was, or rather than doing Lest, or rather than doing Spotify, or whatever, you should be looking at DAD. And that was wrong. We shouldn't have said rather, because the reality is, David Anderson from Kanban, right, talks about starting where you are. If you take people who are doing a traditional way and you impose a new process that's radically different to what they're used to, like Scrum, that can be disruptive. And unless you got some really good coaching to bring them along in the journey, often it fails. Do you ever ask yourself, why after 25 years are we still even talking about this? Why are people still struggling with Agile? And part of it is the way it's introduced. It's something like Scrum can be quite disruptive. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't work. It absolutely does. But some people naturally push back against it. And Lean and David Anderson says, don't do that. Take what they're currently doing and then evolve from there to evolve the system, build a better system from where they are right now. You'll get much less pushback. And by the way, this is what I'm doing with a client right now in California, is we're taking their existing process. They're awesome technically in CI, CD and deploying every day, but their process is a little bit messed up. I'm not going to go in there and just disrupt the way their way of working. I'm going to actually go in, and I have already done some value stream mapping to understand their current way of working. Now we're mapping it, and we'll evolve from there. We'll lean up and, but back to your question, the whole point of what I'm saying is that what we are sort of positioning so people get a better understanding about what DAD is and how it works is, it's not DAD or whatever you're doing, it's DAD and whatever you're doing. If you're doing Scrum, you may be successful, you may not be successful, but what we would suggest is that you're gonna need to do more than what's in that guide. And we probably you may be awesome, but we believe you can be more awesome if you take advantage of some of the techniques on your agile learning journey from the toolkit. And now, you know, I'm saying the same thing about SAFe. I got to be honest with you. I think that SAFe is being applied in many situations which are beyond its original intent. You know, the original case study was John Deere, 300 developers building one piece of software for tractors. That if you go into a bank, they're building all sorts of different kinds of things, including COBOL systems. And applying a pattern like SAFe, I'm seeing is being misapplied in many situations. But I'll get off the SAFe thing for a second. If you're using SAFe and it makes sense for you, then we believe you can be even more effective with SAFe because even at the, you know, you've got the portfolio program and Teams things and the trains and all that. But at the end of the day, there's real people in the trenches building solutions. And that could be using Scrum, XP, Lean. And those teams will still need some guidance beyond what you learn in a SAFe Scrum XP course. There's far more to it, right? So right. You can take the toolkit of hundreds of strategies and refer to them. It's like a reference, right? It's not a playbook. It's a reference. And you pull the ones that help you be more awesome regardless of the method or framework that you're using. So if you were to call us in for help on DA, we are not, absolutely not going to come in and say, stop doing X and start doing DA. That's not our message.
So, and I'm glad you ended that statement, ended that comment with that statement, because one of the things you just talked about, Mark, you talked about quoting David Anderson and starting where you are. And like you said, a lot of times we see agile concepts and practices misapplied. Right. Not you talk about you just mentioned, you know, it's not being used in the way it was currently intended. And we all know that when it comes to these types of organizational change, especially organizations at size, enterprise, there is only so much, you know, the organizational elasticity, there's only so much change people can absorb before they go crazy. And one of the things that also caught my eye about Discipline Agile was your approach to, when it comes to starting where people are, the acknowledgement that there is a pre-existing level of enterprise governance and process already in place. So for example, you know, when you look at the SAFe big picture, when you look at Scrum, the first question everybody asks, especially if you come from a very PMO heavy world, is, well, where do you hand it off to production support, right? Because eventually production support goes away in a highly idealized environment, but that's not realistic. To start, just like the same as, oh, well, you don't need to do some sort of upfront design. You just go and do, and the product owner knows everything. And one of the other things that caught my eye, which I'd like you to give a little bit of clarity to our listeners, is you do have this concept of, if you're just starting out, you do need to acknowledge what you call the inception phase, and you need to acknowledge what you call the transition phase. Can you give us a little bit more about that, the history, where that came from, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So lots to unpack there. There's governance there, and there's phases. In fact, I've done a talk on governance, phases, milestones are not dirty words. And one of the reasons DA has become extremely popular in the financial services industry is because we don't run away from governance. We recognize that it's just good professional behavior to expect to report the health of an initiative back to the people who are paying for it. And also to set the expectations before the initiative starts of what we expect to get out of the investment. Now, this is not big upfront planning I'm talking about. I'm not talking about detailed requirements, detailed plans, or anything like that. It's lightweight, and an inception can be 2 weeks, could be a month, could be one day. I run one day inceptions and get everybody in a room, flip charts and whiteboards. And at the end of the day, we sort of say, over the next 3 months, we want to deliver X it's we're going to use this architecture. These are generally the features we're going to deliver with this team. And just these are the key risks to think about. By the way, a lot of the mainstream agile methods don't even talk about risk. And risk management is part of governance, and it's baked right into the DA toolkit. So we don't run away from it. And people who say we don't need no stinking governance, what they tells me is they have no idea what the word governance is.
Right.
If you have daily stand-ups, that's status, that's governance. If you have burn down charts, that's status, that's governance. So if you have coding standards, that's governance. So you have governance. The key is to keep it lightweight. And let me tell you a little story about PMOs and those kinds of things. I ran a workshop in Manchester a couple of weeks ago, on lean governance. And it's about governance, what it means in lean agile world, and metrics. And what are good metrics, and how do you design metrics and roll them out and report them up, roll them up, and all that kind of stuff. And there were a couple of people from PMOs that attended. They knew nothing about DA. They weren't there to learn about discipline agile. They were there to learn about lean governance. They walked out of that workshop saying, wow, this DA thing's pretty cool. So flash ahead to this week, I ran a 2-day workshop here in London, and the same person attended, and she brought her boss, who is the head of strategy for a company that's got 14,000 people. They have now just decided that they are going to go with DA across the company. So what I'm saying is that once people, especially PMOs, see the kind of sort of professional enterprise aware stuff that's in DA, they say, this is what we've been looking for. And it's about choice and context and pragmatism. You know, what's not to like about it. The other thing I want to talk about before we move on is this idea of inception and transition. Yeah, we get beat up about having those phases by the agile purists. And you ask, where does it come from? My history is I spent some time working for Rational Software. So I was, you know, one of Canada's experts in the Rational Unified process. And, you know, I don't really want to talk too much about RUP because it's been beat up over the years. And primarily because it was misused. It was meant to be iterative development based on working software in what we used to call iterations instead of sprints. And that was supposed to be the focus, not on documentation, but people rolled out RUP as a waterfall. They misunderstood it. The inception was a big planning exercise, elaboration was requirements, construction was building, and transition was testing and rolling it out. That was not, if anybody really took the time to understand the rational process, that's not the way it was supposed to be. So anyway, but it's got some interesting ideas in there. It has its faults. Like it used to want us to write detailed requirements with use cases. So that definitely is not on these days. But it also had some strengths. In every method framework, there's some good ideas, right? And their governance ideas about risk management, proving out the architecture in your early iterations, are good ideas, and other milestones along the way. And by the way, a milestone isn't stage gate documents, big meetings, blah, blah, blah. A milestone can be simply a placeholder for logical times to have a conversation. So a placeholder for a conversation is what I call a milestone. You know, we're at a certain point. Does it make sense to take a look at the project and adjust? Are we ready to go live? Do we have understanding on a vision? These are examples of the milestones that we put in. Now, if for inception and transition, one of the reasons that we haven't gotten the uptake in the agile community is that they invest all of 90 seconds looking at DA. They go to disciplinedagiledelivery.com and they see a picture that shows inception, construction, and transition. And the older people will go, OMG, that's RUP, and I don't like RUP, because they recognize the phases. And by the way, we don't have elaboration anymore because it was misunderstood and treated as a requirements phase. So we have those three: inception, construction, and transition. And they see that and they go, it's RUP, agile RUP, I don't want that, and they run away. Then there's another crowd that says it uses the word phase, and I don't like phase. We should just jump in and start building it and figuring out as we go. You know, I don't disagree with that. And you can ask anyone who understands DA, we actually don't like phases. We would like them to go away. We hope that you don't need an inception. We hope that you don't need a transition. If you're doing continuous delivery or you press a button and you can go live, you absolutely do not need a transition. For inception, if you're rolling from one release to another and you have a backlog in place already for your next most important features, then you don't need a week to assemble a backlog. If you're keeping your team together, rolling into a new release, then you don't need a few days to recruit and get a team together. You don't need time to assemble your tools. All these are things that you would do in an inception for a new release, a new project or product. You have to do these things. You're not ready to start writing code until you do. And by the way, usually you need to actually review what you found with your sponsors so that they can say, yeah, the project makes sense, go ahead. Or no, it costs too much, I'm gonna go buy a package instead, right? So use inception when you need it to determine whether or not the project makes sense to at least start. If you don't need it, don't use it. And for transition, the same thing. If you can press a button and go live, you don't need transition, but you know what? Some organizations, it's just not that easy. At least it's just not that easy yet in our evolution of capability as an industry. You still have some banks and other kinds of companies that going live is not a trivial event. You may need a week or a weekend to do some final testing, maybe some performance testing. And maybe you're an ITIL organization and you're not allowed to deploy yourself. You have to hand it over to somebody else. So in those cases, that's not what we call frictionless deployment. And if it's not frictionless, then maybe we need a phase. It's a period of time, and you know, sue us for calling it a phase. But Scott likes to say it is what it is, right?
But it also ties to your remark about, and you used it early on, enterprise aware, right? You're meeting people where they're at, and you're starting from there. There is a preconceived enterprise. And I dare say that the people who look at the inception, they look at the transition, they say, oh, this is RUP, or this is close to waterfall. That's a statement made out of ignorance. It's a lot like, if you go on Twitter and you go to Agile Twitter and start talking about no estimates, somebody's going to come out of nowhere and start yelling because they don't understand how you can deliver software without estimates, which shows they didn't even conceptually try to understand the book. One of the things that's big in the Agile ecosystem nowadays is the idea of a maturity model, right? An Agile maturity model. How do we measure our maturity, et cetera, et cetera? And this was another thing to me personally when I took the course, it jumped out at me, is Discipline Agile acknowledges the fact that you're going to start with an Agile life cycle, but as you mature and as you progress, you're going to go to more of a lean operating model. You're going to have that continuous delivery. And then eventually, in an ideal state, you get to what I think you termed as lean continuous delivery, where it truly is a lean system, which is based upon flow. So I really think when people see that inception and transition, they're seeing it and they're making a snap judgment. They're not diving in to understand that there's three or four steps past that, which will actually get you to where you really want to go. But you need to start somewhere. You need to crawl before you can walk, before you can run.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, oh boy, I could just talk for an hour just on this one topic. So I'll try to keep it short. And by the way, just if anybody wants to learn more beyond this podcast, go to YouTube and find a talk that I did on choose your way of working. Cause it really does represent our most current sort of, here's what DA is all about. I think we finally kind of figured out how to talk about DA. Invest an hour, I think you'll get it. That's the feedback we're getting. So Choose Your Wow on YouTube is where you can find out more information about this stuff. Life cycle evolution. To be honest, we think that Scrum is awesome in certain situations. And if you like Scrum, keep doing it, don't do anything else. But we also believe that Scrum actually is not a great way of doing Agile in other situations. And a good example is, having maintenance teams is not a good practice. I think we all understand that the people who build it should be the people who support it. That's just general DevOps philosophy. But there's a difference between idealism and what's really going on out there. And you can't change the world in a minute. And so if we go into an organization and we're firing up some Scrum teams, awesome. But we also think lean is awesome. So we use that in certain situations. Now, if we go into an organization and they've got people who build stuff, and then they've got maybe an India center that does maintenance, we'll be very clear that they probably want to think about changing their model. But if that's their business reality, and you try to use Scrum on a team where their priorities are changing every day as production incidents come in, they're going to go nuts. That Scrum will fall apart. It's absolutely the wrong approach, because you can't have any real sprint goals when your priorities are changing every day. This is where lean is a better approach than Scrum. But I'm not bashing Scrum. If Scrum is good for you, don't change. But wouldn't it be nice to have the liberty to pursue a different option if you think it makes more sense. And this is where we think it's a crying shame that organizations call themselves a certain kind of shop, a scrum shop, a safe shop, a Kanban shop, or whatever shop, right? Because the reality is every organization is doing a bit of everything. That is the reality. You know, you talk to a big bank here in England and they might call themselves a safe shop, but I guarantee you, anybody who's down there in the trenches knows that not everything is safe.
Right.
So we're about context counts, pragmatism, and choice is good. And part of context counts and choice is good is that we recognize that some situation, we have actually six life cycles. We just added a new one to have like a safe like model for people who want to understand how you do safe with DA. It's called the program life cycle. And people say, oh, that sounds way too complicated. It's not. It's not that hard. We have two that are based on Scrum. One is like a continuous delivery Scrum where you're shipping every sprint or iteration. And by the way, we don't call it the Scrum life cycle. We call it the Agile life cycle. It's Scrum based. It has iterations, but nobody just does Scrum, right? You're going to layer in some XP and some Agile modeling, some Agile data, and maybe a bit of governance. Collectively, that's all Agile, but the commonality to it is it has iterations, what Scrum calls sprints. But then we have Lean, and we have Lean, normal Lean, and then Lean continuous delivery. The normal Lean means, imagine that bank again that's doing as a maintenance team, but they can only release stuff every 2 weeks or every month because of the transition friction, the planning they have to do around a release. So they actually batch up a number of changes, but they pull them in a Lean style, fix them, and then put them on the shelf and then go live with them once a month. That's the Lean life cycle. But if you're an Amazon, you're going live many times a day, many, many times a day. And that is pulling work, building it, testing it, shipping it, and doing it again, over and over again. And for that, we have a continuous delivery Lean life cycle. So those are four of them. And then we have one loosely based on the Lean startup ideas called the exploratory life cycle, where we want to explore whether or not there's actually a need for what we want to build and find out what the true need is. So we got an experimental exploratory model, and then we've got the program. So those are the six life cycles. And back to your original point, we actually believe that the Amazon model is the way to go. And I would say to you, Amazon, I don't know, but I don't imagine there's a whole lot of Scrum going on at Amazon. I bet you it's a lot more of the continuous delivery Lean life cycle I just talked about.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
So the thing is, isn't it disappointing if your leader has said, we will do Scrum, or we'll do large scale Scrum, we'll do less. Well, so that means Scrum everywhere and no Lean. And that just makes no sense to us, because we believe that, you know, some life cycles are actually more effective than others. Start with Scrum if you want, or start with Lean if you're ready for that. And then give the team the permission to evolve, to climb a maturity curve if they want and are able and have the skills to do so. And Ivar Jakobsen, I don't know if you know of Ivar, but I've learned a lot from Ivar over the years. And he's on a talk these days, and he's talking about methods prison. And he's saying that a lot of the methods and frameworks out there try to keep us in prison. They do not want us to evolve. Like, if you think about Scrum, it's not in their interest. The Scrum Alliance is an example. I'm not picking on Scrum Alliance, just the principle in general. It's not in their interest to help you get out of Scrum, right? So in fact, in Scrum, you're kind of, be careful. I don't want to look like I'm bashing Scrum, but it's like you have to do these ceremonies, right? You have to do a stand-up. You have to do sprint planning. You have to do a retro. I tell you what, I know a lot of Lean teams that they would sit around a table side by side pairing all day long. They do not need to stand up for 15 minutes every morning to talk about what they did yesterday, because they did it together, right? So a team like that is going to say, can I have my 15 minutes back? Because we all know what we're working on. We all know of any blockers that are aware, because we just work so well together. Then can I have that 15 minutes back? And then retrospective, same idea. We're taught that to have a sit down ceremony at the end of a sprint to talk about reflect on how we did and how we can get better. And a good Lean team sitting around a table will say, hey, you know what? This isn't working. We should try this instead. How about that? And the team goes, awesome. Let's give that a try. And imagine if you had a Scrum Master saying, no, don't improve right now. No, that's not allowed. We will talk about that improvement next Friday. There's a place for that, right?
Right.
I'm being silly, right? So again, I do not want to come across like I'm criticizing Scrum, because if it works for you, you can make a solid argument for having a retrospective, by the way. It's an opportunity to pause, reflect, maybe play some table tennis. I've used retrospectives to have a few beverages to celebrate our success. So I'm not criticizing the ceremony. What I'm criticizing is any sort of religion that tells you you can't do anything, and then, or you're called Scrum Butt. You're actually disincented, ostracized, thrown out of the community if you want to actually move on and do something that you think is more effective. So as you've talked about, Jay, is that what we talk about in our books and is a migration. If you choose to follow that path, here's how you would become even more awesome. Like that's what one of our principles is: be awesome. And you can be awesome with Scrum, but I think in some situations, you can definitely be more awesome with other approaches.
And that's actually a statement, Mark, of a greater, not only just Scrum or even SAFe, but it's really the agile ecosystem as a whole, where almost it's a human thing where we try to apply every single thing very rigidly, and you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do that. And it takes a bit to break the mold. Like you said, it's all a bunch of tools out there, and you have to break that mold to say, well, this doesn't work for us. Why would we continue doing it? It's Einstein's definition of insanity. I know we're quickly approaching time, and I think you and I could go probably for another hour. I didn't even get a chance to talk about things like Discipline Agile is the first one to actually look at the Agile Manifesto and suggest some changes, which actually make a lot of sense. That's probably a whole other episode in itself, but there's, and I guess my point by bringing that up is you and Scott, when you started this, from the outside looking in, it appears that you really did take it with, well, we do need to continuously improve. You know, Dave Snowden talks about all the time about challenging shibboleths, right? Don't hold anything sacrosanct. It's a new way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Where everything should be questioned.
And I can give you one example, Jay. Yes, we are heretics, because we actually added a value to the Agile Manifesto and a few principles and changed a few. But a simple example. I mean, I get that it's kind of like the Bible. You don't mess with the Bible. But some of the concepts just are outdated. Like that one of them is deliver software from as quickly as possible, ideally from every several weeks to several months, with the shorter being, that along those lines, shorter being better. But, you know, really, like your ambition is to deliver every 2 weeks. I mean, so we've changed from many times a day would be your goal to several weeks. So back in the day, in 2001, delivering stuff every 2 weeks was a huge accomplishment. Nowadays, not so much, right?
Right.
So we're just trying to make it a little bit more relevant.
Mark, so I want to ask you, you talked about how you just put out your new version of your book. It's called, Way of Working, Choose Your WoW. What does the future, if you can give us a little bit of insight, what does the future hold for Discipline Agile? Like, what are some of the things that you and Scott and the rest of your practitioners, what are you looking towards on the horizon?
Some amazing stuff is coming, Jay. First of all, if I can make a couple of points before we run out of time.
Sure.
And then I'll get to your point about the future. One of the things I'm trying to get across to people, both to employers and to agile practitioners, is that, you know, if we're going to take ourselves seriously as a profession, we have to understand that, you know, getting a certification based on Scrum is just not enough. To give credit where credit is due, like Scrum.org and the Scrum is trying to up their game and with much more harder, credible certifications. But even that is just Scrum. I believe that if we take pride in our craft and we want to call ourselves engineers, which is what some of we strive to be in more of an engineering-like profession, then we should invest in learning. So I know the book is big. Our current book is 500 pages, but I sometimes compare it to the PMBOK or like Project PMI. Regardless of what you feel about traditional project management, the certification program is credible. It's a big body of knowledge. It's a hard test. You have to have thousands of hours of experience. But and if you get a PMP, you know, again, regardless of what you think of that, they earned it. It's a credible certification. And we take the same approach to our certification program. It's hard, but I believe the word is going to get out there in the industry that people who have that certification know their stuff. They know what they have a vast toolkit that most of their consultants don't have. And we're actually hearing that. We have quotes from some of our clients that people who are certified, teams that are certified, are more effective than the teams are not. It's no surprise to us because the teams know about all these techniques.
Right. They've taken the time to learn and educate and invested in that.
Spend some time. Yeah. It's a big book, right? But go through it once, take your medicine, and you're going to be much more effective, and then take a test to prove that you know it. And I think that the word is going to get out there that people who, like you saw messages, if you're a consultant or inside an organization, you will be more effective than other consultants that don't have this. So I think consultants should invest in this. So, you know, take your SAFE certification, take your Scrum certification, Kanban, whatever you need, but supplement it with these ideas that will help you be more successful with whatever, you know, engagements that you're working on. Don't go into a place and say, you need to be a dad shop. Do not do that. Please do not do that. Do whatever they're doing, but say, hey, you know what? I bring in this vast toolkit. I can help you fix any problems you have, be effective with whatever you're currently doing. So that's the first thing. And I also have the same message for employers. You know, if I was an employer and I was spending money for consultants, I would absolutely insist that they know what's in this toolkit, because I know they're going to be better consultants. So that's the value I'm trying to sell to organizations and to people. You will be better, I promise you. You will learn stuff from this toolkit. Invest some time in learning it. And then the second thing is, it's not that hard. People associate the size of the book and the body of knowledge with hard. It's not. If you're doing Scrum, do Scrum. And then if you need some requirements, modeling ideas to supplement your stories, just look up Explore Scope Goal, pick it off the shelf for your Kindle, look at options, say, personas, I'll try that. Close the book, close your tablet, and off you go. It's not that hard.
I will say, as someone and an actual user testimonial, it does look very imposing, but you're right, it isn't that hard. And if you're walking into a Discipline Agile course and you're picking up that book and you have at least a frame of reference around iterative development and where it comes from, it's almost like it's one of those things where you're looking at yourself and you're going, well, duh, I know this. Yeah. But then you're thinking to yourself, why don't I think of this more often? Because I knew this. It for me personally, not to steal your stump, Mark, it helped trigger some of the things that I forgot that I actually knew. And it did. I will concur 100% that it does help you think differently about being a practitioner. But I'm sorry, continue.
No, okay. So that takes me to, you know, the future of DA. And I can't, you know, there's some stuff that we have an advisory council. And of course, I work with Scott. So I can't really tell you exactly where we're going, but we do realize we have some gaps that we want to fill. But like we talk about, ideas in DAD can help, or DA can help you reach a target state that makes sense for your organization where you're truly agile. In fact, it goes way beyond teams. I want to also point out to people, go to one website that can get you to everything, membership certification and the body of knowledge, is disciplined-agile.com. From there, if you hit framework, which I'm going to actually be named to the word toolkit, when you hit the framework or toolkit button, it will take you to disciplined-agile-delivery.com. And what I want you to look at there is there's a onion, but it's like a square onion because it's just the only way you could draw it. And it has four layers. The bottom layer is DAD, which is how to make high-performance teams using all the stuff we talked about today. The next level is DevOps, which is disciplined DevOps. What does DevOps mean in an organization? Not just an Amazon, but in an organization where you actually have other parts of your DevOps. You have data, security, release management. This is enterprise DevOps. These are the realities you have to deal with, but you need to be agile about it. The third of four layers is Discipline Agile IT. So what about governance ideas and people management, you know, HR kind of ideas? And then last, at the highest level, we got things like finance. How do you be agile with finance and legal and procurement and marketing? That's a true agile business. I'm waving my hands around here. You can't see me, but if you don't do that stuff at the top, if you don't help them be agile, the teams at the bottom are going to be miserable. We have to optimize the whole. So DAD isn't just about the Choose Your Wow book. The Choose Your Wow book is about building high performance teams. But there are other books. The Executive Guide goes into the other areas I just talked about and just touches on how you can be more effective in HR. as in, or, you know, what people call people operations or these days. And I think what you're going to see is we're going to build out more content in terms of, I don't know if it's going to be certifications or I think it'll be more like badges. And we'll break the big into small and give people little badges when they take us like a half hour a session on something rather than 3 days, right? I think that people are getting a little tired of the 4-day courses. They would rather sit on the tube here in London and listen to your podcast or a little snippet of DA and eat it like a bite at a time. And that's what you're going to see with us. I think you're going to see us sort of break it out into logical little pieces. It'll be easier to consume and fill in some additional content in the upper level layers of the DA toolkit, where I think a little bit, it's a bit sparse. There'll be some courseware, maybe some badges around it. And also, we didn't have time to talk today, but we use a flavor of lean change, if you've heard of that, to actually help change organizations, evolve their culture, evolve their practices, so that they can become overall an agile business, not just the team's bit at the bottom, right? So you don't get much change management direction from us. We lean on lean change because the approach works. It's proven for us to work over and over again. So that's a shout out to Jason Little and his work. And also Simon Powers here in the UK has used a similar approach.
So Mark, where can, if listeners want to know more about Discipline Agile, they want to contact you, where can they find you? Do you have any upcoming events, any conferences, presentations, any things you want to shout out between you and Scott coming up that our listeners should be aware of? They might want to, if their curiosity is piqued, where should they go?
Yeah. So a number of things. First of all, the to find information online, First of all, our books, Amazon, Kindle, they're available. Just search for Discipline Agile. If you want to browse information about it, go to disciplined-agile.com. And from there, you can go off to the online body of knowledge, which isn't as comprehensive as what are in our books. Also that you can jump off to the certification and membership area. And in there, it's very easy to become a member. I think if you're not certified, it's like $50. If you're certified, you get a first year free or something. But there's lots of webinars. If you want to learn about metrics or governance or agile HR, all that stuff, you've got tons of really solid, how to do the transformations that I talked about, the technique we use on Lean Change. I did an hour episode on that. So great references. There's great references, some of which are only available to members at the disciplinedagileconsortium.org. You don't have to remember all these URLs because you can get through them all from discipline-agile.com. So there's the blog, there's the content, there's the certification membership and all the resources and videos behind that. There's also some videos on a YouTube channel. There's a Disciplined Agile YouTube channel. There's, of course, Twitter at @dis_agile, @DISC_agile. I'm at @mark_lines. And last but not least, there's a LinkedIn discussion group which has about 6,000 members. There's lots of good discussion going on in that LinkedIn group. And as far as events, well, we run regular webinars. So if you go to the membership website, you'll see all the upcoming webinars as well as courses, certified partners, instructors, all that stuff. So if you want looking for a local resource or a coach, there's a membership listing. You can search for certified people if you need some help. And lastly, I'll say we had our first face-to-face conference this year in Vegas. It was awesome. I think it's going to be twice as big next year, if not more. And we've had an online conference last year, and we're having another one on September 24th. It's like, I think, $75, and it's 15-minute talks. It was very successful last year. It's going to sell out this year. We can support hundreds of people, but we do have a limit. And registration's been open for a few days, and we already have over 100 people signed up for it. So check that out.
Fantastic. I look forward to crossing paths with you, Mark, in September.
Awesome.
So again, on behalf of the Agile Uprising, Mark, I'd really like to thank you, offer a sincere, sincere thanks for volunteering to spend time with us. You know, Mark is, for those of you who don't know, it's at the end of his work week. We're recording this on a Friday. So I'm extra lucky to be able to get his time. On behalf of Mark and myself, I'd like to thank all of you listeners for tuning in. Hopefully you've enjoyed the episode, you've enjoyed the series. Once again, there will be a thread about this podcast posted on coalition.agileuprising.com. So please hop in and join the conversation. And until next time, Mark, thank you very much. This is the Agile Uprising signing out.
Thank you.